presented by B Matters, with host Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom.
Feeding does matter.
Welcome to Feeding Does Matter. I'm Jacqueline Peterson, CEO of Feeding Matters, and I am here with our Director of Strategic Initiatives at Feeding Matters, who also works in the NICU and has a long history of being a feeding therapist and occupational therapist. So welcome, Kyler. Great to see you.
Good to see you too. Nice to have a little chat this morning. We're on a Sunday morning and getting to dive into a fun conversation, I hope.
Had to get kids settled and everything to get started. But yeah, it is good to dive into this. And so everybody knows the reason we're doing this is Kyler and I were just out in Atlanta on a trip together, because we were invited to facilitate a consensus meeting. And it was really nice. Feeding Matters has done many consensus meetings. We feel like we've really been able to build a process. And Kyler, as our strategic initiatives person, has really led the charge on this. It was a great experience, but it was the first time that it wasn't like our world as much. Kyler, I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that or want to share a little bit about that part of it.
Oh, it was such a unique opportunity. We got to dip our toe into the other side of the story that doesn't necessarily in our world get as much attention, which is children that are dealing with decreased activity, higher growth velocities, and obesity issues and challenges for their overall health and well-being. So we were invited by the Healthy Weight Research Network to facilitate a consensus meeting that was really like the accumulation of all of their work that they've done for the past, I think it was 13 years.
It's been a long time that they've been working on this.
Yeah. Effort. So this wonderful group
they've had lots of publications, lots of expertise and guidelines shared. And yeah, it was the culmination of their work.
Yes. They put so much research out into the space, and now they wanted to come together as a group to develop a consensus publication on application of obesity management to children that are on the autism spectrum, children with intellectual disability. And then as we found, as we went through our discussion, they broadened it to include children that also had developmental disabilities. So we were invited in as the consensus facilitators and got to see into their world a little bit.
Yeah. And I also think it was so great to be able to be from, like, not only just serving as outside facilitators in a space like that, but also to bring a little bit of our world into their world. I think, as we've talked about a lot on this and other offerings from Feeding Matters, we're really trying to pursue how we can build bridges of collaboration and really grow who is involved in this work and who has an understanding and an awareness. And so for me, that was also really a great win out of this too, was really being able to see that, like, you've got so many people who are very focused, rightly so, in their worlds, but sometimes we need some people to step a little bit outside of that and connect worlds together. And that for me was a great opportunity in this regard too.
Yes. And I personally, I may be a little biased, but I do feel like we are perfectly positioned to be that conduit between all these different groups that are interacting within this space, where we're talking about feeding development, weight implications, health implications, and how it affects families.
Yeah, for sure. It ties really nicely into our new system change initiative, Beyond the Growth Chart. So that work will continue, and we will share more as it continues. After the consensus meeting itself, there is often a lot of labor of love and writing and meetings that happen after an initial in-person meeting. And then you'll hear more from us as that work continues. But we thought we'd take a moment just to talk about how we approach it. And so, Kyler, you've done a lot of work in terms of really researching and learning more about consensus as we've iterated our process to kind of create the Feeding Matters consensus way over the years. Tell me a little bit about how you feel like we approach consensus.
That is an excellent question. there's so many different strategies and there's multiple frameworks or models and how you can approach consensus. And at Feeding Matters, we bring in guiding principles before we even bring people to the table. So first, we want to see if we can be philosophically aligned in how we enter the room. Uh-huh. And we have found that that has really shaped the depth and the breadth of information we're able to gather from each and every participant. So you really truly have a consensus process. You know, the risk of bringing people together that are so accomplished and experts in their areas is sometimes certain voices can be louder than others. You know, it depends on the person's work, their line of practice, their unique personality, their convictions. And so what we strive to do is create a space of equality so that everyone that is at that table feels that they have the right to contribute and to be heard. And so we really try to set the stage with these guiding principles that we make sure everybody has in writing, that everyone can attest that that aligns with themselves as a person and a professional, so that we are able to get more work done. I think at a rapid speed.
Yeah.
You know, we're able to be quite efficient when we come in and have these precious hours with this group of experts. I think because we've gotten through some of these preparatory pieces where we're aligned and the expectations of how we're showing up for the conversations.
Yeah, true. Because you do have to show up to a table with the openness to be able to understand that the point is to get to consensus. It's not to be right, to do your part, or to do all of these things. Like the idea, and it's a hard task to get 12 or so people to build consensus and agree on something. But I think as we've found over the years, hopefully these guiding principles allow for that some of that pre-work and foundation to be laid before the conversation starts. So maybe let's start by going through the principles just so people have an outside view of what we hope that anyone, because the idea is, you know, we know that there is so much consensus building that needs to happen in this field. We hope to do more of these. And so maybe this helps if you're thinking about this, or even in your own world, there's a lot of consensus building that needs to happen, whether you're a parent or a professional in the feeding space. So maybe these can serve as just guiding principles in general. And if you do have feedback on them, we are always open to hearing that and really exploring how we can always iterate and build and make things even better. So that's our goal as always. So the first principle, Kyler, is to operate around the following governing principles, kind of just like our opening statement, that we will work together to reach consensus. And that's the guiding principles of being having participation, transparency, responsiveness, a consensus orientation, that true interest in making sure that that's what we're focused on, equity, inclusiveness, effectiveness, efficiency, accountability, and rules of engagement. What's your perspective on that one?
Now, that is quite a lot of verbiage in one guiding principle in one statement.
I'm shaking my head. Yep.
But it's the North Star where we can lean into this principle if we feel like things are kind of going a little sideways or, you know, perhaps someone's voice isn't being elevated or someone's voice is a bit too strong. We can go back to this and lean into the accountability, the efficiency, so we're not backtracking, which is a big risk in consensus building, is that we feel like we've gotten to agreement on a particular statement or principle or idea. But then as you engage in this really rich dialogue that evolves throughout the day, it is very easy to get caught in a feedback loop where you go back to something you've agreed upon and we start backtracking a little bit. So I love that we list efficiency as well as rules of engagement and effectiveness, like all lumped together. This gives you like the foundation and the why behind how we make decisions, gain consensus, record it, and then move on to the next piece is really how I see this first statement helping us tremendously with facilitation so that they are able to get their goals and their needs met within you know, a day.
Yeah, it's a few hours. It ends up being around like 5 true hours of working time. And that's not a lot, but a lot of people give a lot of time to make those 5 hours happen. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think as facilitators, our responsibility is reminding everybody why they're there. And if we've agreed on something, pulling everybody back to that, kind of keeping track of the day. As in many spaces, ours in particular, there are so many rabbit holes to fall down into. And it can be so easy to get caught in conversation that kind of pulls that away. So I agree that those really kind of keep us grounded. Uh-huh. So the next one, encourage cooperation in support and environment where all views are valued and heard. Maybe tell me a little bit more about that or how you've experienced that in some of these meetings.
I've experienced this in different ways, depending on what we're talking about. So sure. Let's take an example where Feeding Matters is leading the conception of the consensus, you know, from ideation all the way through.
Outside of the meeting itself.
Exactly. The entire process. This is where I feel like one of the areas where we really excel, because what we continue to see is that it matters tremendously who is at the table. And if we are missing a voice at that table, we potentially could miss a key element of something that's needed to advance care or improve practice. So the way we tackle this is even from conception, understanding all of the players and the stakeholders that influence what needs to be done around that particular problem or issue, including the caregiver experience. Which I really do feel like we put our money where our mouth is with that after receiving the PCORI Award and being able to establish the Family and Patient Consortium. So now we have structure, governance, and management of being able to have representation on these key consensus publications and initiatives from conception on. So I would say from the Feeding Matters side, we ensure that there is representation to the best of our ability. Yeah. And of course,
and we've learned in this. I was like, we've learned in this too. Yeah. It's like, it's been an ongoing process. I think in our last 20 years of continuing to ask who's not at the table. And I think this last consensus meeting, even working with those that are in obesity management and those that are in physical activity, realizing, oh, there's even more people to be inviting to this as
Absolutely.
Well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My other thought to that is sometimes there are budgetary limitations or just limitations in what you're able to do within a certain time frame. And so we have really...
It's a struggle. It weighs really heavy on my heart in terms of how do you balance budget, who could be at the table, and, you know, the sheer mass of people that need to, because you can't have a consensus with 30 people. That's where you need to get into some of the other consensus frameworks. Yeah, that's
right.
So true.
And that's why we continue to have an avenue for community engagement. And I think that is key to anything and everything that we do, is that there is a pathway for community participation. If we're talking about this other situation where we are invited in, where all this principle you might see more in action when we're there in person and directly working with the consensus members. It depends on, you know, where we entered the process, I think, and then where we want to go. But just by having facilitators that are from a system change organization, I do feel like we bring different language and facilitation principles into discussions that really lean into recognition and valuing the diversity of thought that we would like to see emerge during discussions.
Yeah, I think it's pushing people to think as a system, because it can be really challenging if you come from a certain perspective or expertise to stay in that. But that's where I do think that there's been some amazing conversations. And this actually gets to the next consensus principle, which is promote a deepening expertise among members. And that, like, when you're each bringing a particular subject matter expertise, lived experience expertise, or perspective, there can be I can't even find the word for it, an opportunity that may not further consensus if someone kind of like sits in their expertise. But I feel like we've seen so many times, and this is how I know we've got the right people in the room, of someone being like, oh, I don't understand what you're saying, but maybe tell me more, or help me understand what you mean by that, because I mean this. And really kind of that questioning of, and being open to like, you teach me from your expertise and let me deepen my understanding so we can come to a shared understanding.
Mm-hmm. I always feel that we've done our job to the best of our ability that day if we could have members leaving a little bit changed with a little bit of a broader view. Because I know I can have my own occupational therapy, feeding and swallowing specialist, that bias, you know, cap on sometimes when you're entering conversations because you want to advocate for what you're seeing happening within your sector of patient care. Right. You see what's happening to families and children. You would like that to change. You have the, you know, idea or feeling that we could do it a bit better in what we're providing. And so you want to advocate for that. But then when you come to these tables and you see the implications of everyone's care on the family and how vital all of those outlooks are to how a child and family functions, it really does change you. So that you are seeking the thoughts and opinions of others. And it's very interesting to see how that evolution happens within consensus meetings too, how people will personally reach out to others to
people have built a community out of it too. You're so right. And it leads me to the next one, which is embrace shared compromise. How do you think it lends itself to that?
Oh, consensus is compromise, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I think that's kind of the first thing you have to let go when you enter into a consensus discussion. Yes. Doesn't get to be a me discussion.
No.
I feel like all these interact to create this buy-in for shared compromise that we will achieve more together with a shared compromise than we ever will with a personal agenda.
Yep. Which honestly, I'm going to bring in the next one because you're right. They all build on each other. They all are like integrated and it's all kind of meets the picture for how do we enter the room, which is fully participate to the extent possible, knowing success depends on the inclusion of every individual voice. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to do the second one, which is commit to finding opportunities for consensus, compromise, and creative solutions, which is that like shared piece that this is like us together. We can stand behind what has been discussed. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
You know what this principle is bringing to mind? Because I know what we're talking about here is how we get philosophical alignment so that when people enter the room, we hit the room aligned, ready to engage and ready to work. That's what these 10.
Well, because I don't think we mentioned that. We do ask everybody to attest to this when they are going through their pre-work process. So these are things that people see before entering a room.
But before this even happens, there are multiple steps that we do as part of our strategy of for consensus from a Feeding Matters side, where we have curated reads that are submitted by every consensus member. So we're developing an entire bank of resources that allows every consensus member to say, I feel like this is a pertinent and important piece of evidence that the members need to be familiar with before we enter the room. So we do all of our pre-reads. We also do quite a bit
shared pre-read.
Shared pre-reads, yes. Uh-huh. And quite a bit of pre-work, including often surveys and series of surveys depending on the results. So we'll start the process of trying to identify these early opportunities for consensus. So this is kind of this principle bleeds into how we even approach doing our pre-work. We need to see where we are already aligned so that we can build that as our foundation and then lead into some of the discussions where we're going to need to find creative solutions and compromise. So we also do quite a bit of this work through our preparation before people enter the room.
Yep. So true. The next one is support consensus achievement by acknowledging that once a decision is made or consensus is reached, the decision stands. I feel like this is one that can like lead us astray that I feel like as facilitators, we've continued to try to get better at each time too. Is like, you know, we've got like, this is what everybody agreed on consensus wise, like it's plastered up there. And sometimes we do have to bring people back. But what does that make you think about? Are there any like,
What I
as you think back about the ones we've done?
Well, I hope this carries over into the next phase, right? We're talking about the consensus meeting where we're all together. And then, as you had mentioned, following this is then where the lead author and the people with their identified roles and responsibilities come together and they write and they put together the publication. And what I hope is that we see this principle bleed over into those next steps, because that happens in the writing process as well. And it can really derail a writing group and extend their timeline. And then you start getting a little fatigued. A little writing fatigue, a little consistency.
Yeah, it's hard. And it needs to be within memory in a way that, like, it's close enough. We do record all of them so that we can go back, because you're right. Like, as you're in the writing process, and it can happen really, like, innocently, that you're just kind of writing away and don't realize you've started to, in the nonprofit world, we would call that mission drift, but you've started to kind of, like, drift from the consensus. And so it does take a lot of everybody having that shared accountability to bring people back to what was agreed upon in the room. And this publication is writing up what was agreed upon.
Right. Yep. So yep. We make decisions, we move forward.
It's kind of how we do on our team too at Feeding Matters. So then it's contributing to an atmosphere, this is the next one, of problem solving rather than stating positions. I think that this also attests to how you prepare yourself before entering the room, or even as you are in these conversations that follow up from the meeting. How have you seen people struggle with that, or who's done well with that? How does it, I do think it's a challenging kind of muscle to flex sometimes when you're used to being an expert in your world.
It is. Some things that have helped is establishing a shared aim. Because sometimes we even come into these consensus meetings with different ideas of what the output is going to be.
Yes.
So we have found it's absolutely key that we're able to clearly articulate and buy into the shared aim. And then that sets us up for problem solving. And you take those positions. Everyone does have their unique position and they're highly valuable. So they're able to leverage that position to contribute to the problem solving of where we would like the publication to go, rather than it be a position statement, right?
Yep. Yep.
An individual's position statement, I would say.
That's also, I mean, it's not on here, but as long as you mentioned that, maybe to get into it a little bit, I think another thing that is a hard muscle to flex is in an individual perspective versus kind of zooming out to a broader, either population perspective, broader discipline perspective. Tell me a little bit about how you've seen people do that.
Oh, gosh. I think it kind of depends on what publication we're talking about. I think of how people are contributing in layers of perspective, right? Mm-hmm. We have our personal layer, we have our professional identity, we have our unique clientele and population that we're serving. That's shaped by our assessment and intervention strategies. It's like all these different layers. And what we do as facilitators is take that, all of that skill and expertise, and then we add on the next layer, which is bringing it into system thinking. And if we can help facilitate system-wide thinking, then the expertise builds on it, each other, and will contribute to the big picture. But let's think of an example of how we see this.
You know, I was, as you were talking, I was trying to think about. I honestly think the consortium did a really great job with this in their consensus.
Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, because I think that... So we did the consensus meeting in partnership with the Person and Family-Centered Feeding Research Consortium, and their paper was just published in the Journal of Pediatrics, another shout out. You've got to get it. It's open access through April 30th, so you do have a few more weeks before that open access kind of gets shut down. But in their consensus building of their meeting, I think they did such a good job, because it was, you know, individuals who had the first person experience, and then individuals who had the parent caregiver lived experience piece at the same table with other researchers and clinicians, and then us. And I think it can be really challenging when you have that lived experience of your own. I'm going to speak on behalf of, like, the parent caregiver side here, but as your own child that you watched and your own experience of how you felt as a mom talking to some of these physicians, being able to go into a room and understand that like there's like the individual experience that's there, and then being able to broaden out and say, I can kind of hold both in paradox, and that this effort is to make sure we are fixing the whole system, and that there's going to be a slew of things within that big umbrella, but hopefully that this perspective can be brought forward to move that forward. And I thought they did such a beautiful job with that, and there were lots of discussions, and that's why I also feel like the consensus like table discussions are really important too, because sometimes it's like talking it out that gets you there. Yes. A little bit as well.
Yes, I don't know, people need space to be able to talk it out so that they can share those things. I think of even just my own perspective, and like when we were doing the consensus regarding the diagnostic criteria and the overlap in between PFD and ARFID, I, as a consensus member, had to be very conscientious of not entering as Kyler, the OT that is feeding and swallowing in the level 4 NICU.
Yep.
I really had to remind myself of my role, and my role was to represent feeding skill domain. You know, uniquely as an occupational therapist. And of course, we have speech, language, pathology representation as well. Absolute key discipline under feeding domain. But it takes some like personal constraint as well as the support and the leadership of the facilitators.
Yeah. And you were a consensus member in that. And I will tell you, even as consensus facilitator, it took my own personal restraint too, of like, I of course have my own opinions on where I think all this stuff should go. But like, I mean, I'm a pretty opinionated person, but I have to really be like, once we enter this room, whatever comes out of it is what comes out of it. And that's, you know, like, to the point of we stand behind when a decision stands, like that is, you know, facilitator or, you know, as feeding matters, stand behind the decision that these experts come up with. And so, that's a great one.
It's their publication. It's not our agenda.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Oh, 100%. Because it has. It's gone different than I thought many times. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then the last one, and the probably most important one for us in this work, and why, to your point, I'm so glad we now have the formal structure of the consortium to interact in this way with not only projects that we do as Feeding Matters, but others who are out there who are interested in leveraging the consortium's perspective as partners in research. The last principle that we have is recognize that the family and patient are key decision makers and leaders of the treatment team. Talk to me a little bit about that and how you've seen that play out. I mean, it even happened this last weekend.
Oh, I'm just so glad that we have a pathway for inclusion now, like a formal pathway.
Formal. Yeah, because we've done it so informally over our 20 years, but this is so beautiful to have something formal.
It changes the output. Like how we had mentioned earlier, it matters who's at the table, and having the end user, the person it affects, the actual, you know, outcome represented changes, honestly, everything. And it's truly key. They have to be at the table. It changes your perspective. It changes how you interpret what other people say. And it makes sure that what we're doing, like the work that we're doing actually is valued and needed by the person receiving the service. To me, I think like, why did we not get on this train 30 years ago? Like this still feels like a building, you know, like it's building momentum to even have family and patient represented from conception through these projects. And the hindsight's 2020. So it's like, why have we not been doing this since the beginning of care? They're the ones that matter. And here we are. I think covering excellent ground, but it just, to me, changes what we produce.
It should change. Yeah. And that's, we saw it a lot in the conversations, and, you know, we won't get into details because they do still have to write it up and everything. But this last week, and you could see that the lived experience that was in the room sharing their perspectives did pivot, I think, the direction of where consensus was going. I don't know if that's how you felt, Kyler.
Completely agree.
And that happens a lot, which is why it's important that it's at the table. Yes. And that's why all perspectives are at the table.
Absolutely.
But So key piece. And I agree with you. It's definitely something that, like, as a healthcare system in general, the pivot is a really important thing to make sure we continue to build on and continue to gain momentum on, to make sure that we're all working in partnership with each other.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm.
So those are guiding consensus principles. Mm-hmm. What I do want to touch on as we start to close out today is there is the pre-work that Kyler mentioned and kind of how that gets done even before that happens, where we're figuring out that we need to do this. There's a lot of, like, seeking funding, some of that piece. And then there's, like, who gets included in the meeting. There is often a set methodology for how inclusion criteria for the invites to the meeting, and to honor lived experience or other, like, association partnerships. There's been, like, inclusion based on publication, and then, like, a inclusion based on work with an association or based on a lived experience participant expertise in that perspective. So that's the inclusion criteria. Does look different per consensus meeting, but it is agreed upon ahead of time in order to identify who the invitees are. Then the meeting happens, and then the post meeting is a lot of writing, maybe validation that the direction is as everybody understands it. And then there's the publishing process. As we close out, Kyler, though, I wanted to talk to you about the dissemination, communication, kind of community change management piece of it, because I feel like, especially in the last few, it's been a growing acknowledgement from us on how do we, and we don't have answers. So also, if you've got ideas and you're listening to us, you know, let us know and we'll get you in on the work on this with us. Because that becomes the biggest part, is there's the publication that happens, and then how to, like, continuously get it out there. There's certainly formal channels of dissemination. There's formal channels of implementation. But then there's also just this, like, buy-in piece that we know that we need to build in partnership with our community members too. So I don't know. Talk to me about your thinking about that.
Yeah, I see all of this kind of lumped into one big category, which is the power of the community. And in my mind, I put it into a couple of different buckets. You know, the first is just community engagement. So one, we have to have a channel to the community. We have to have, we have to be tapped in to the people that are doing the work and receiving the care. And so that is part of who we are as Feeding Matters. Yeah. It is our foundation and our base, which is our network, right? Mm-hmm. And our network is tens of thousands of people that are following feeding development, the feeding community, and how care is served. So I first think is, like, we need the body. We need the group of people. Then next is, how do we actually engage them in a meaningful way where they feel like they do have a platform and a voice to contribute to this work? Like, what kind of work do we need? What things do we need to be discussing? What are the most pertinent issues? What are they seeing as barriers? And what are the big wins? What do they need? So there's so many different ways we do this as an organization. And then we have developed more formal pathways when we are looking at developing a new consensus, right? Where there will always be a way for any community member to submit their ideas with their contact information so that they can stay abreast of this work from Feeding Matters. There will always be a direct line of communication to us as an organization. So that's one promise that we've delivered and continue to uphold to the community. Then there's opportunities to engage more deeply, to learn more deeply about the work. What are the consensus publications that Feeding Matters is interested in producing? Where are we as far as the status of production? What does it look like in the end? Like you said, there's formal dissemination pathways that we use where we present this work at our conference, that we bring them to other national conferences, and we really lean on the authorship of the publications to spread it to their worlds, their domains, their disciplines. But again, I feel like we always need to bring it back to the community level, to the grassroots level, because often that's where you see rapid innovation and getting the consensuses into practice,
is at the grassroots level. There's a bit less red tape. It's
yes.
more value-centered. It's more
yes.
client-oriented. And this is where I hope we hear from our community of how they would like to let us know what is working for them. Like when they
yeah.
bring this back to their clientele and they have their unique spin on implementation, those are the stories I hope we continue to collect. I want to hear what's working. What about this landed? What didn't
yeah.
land?
Yeah.
And what
yeah, because this is an iterative process. I think I don't want it to feel like once something comes out in a formal publication that it's like done, wash your hands of it. Like this, you know, we are still building and iterating on the PFD work. We're still building and iterating on the ICFQ work. We're still building and iterating on the PFD and ARFID overlap work. And okay. it takes that continuous building and shared collaboration piece. But you're right. Our community members, especially our frontline members, but both on like lived experience side as well as professional clinician side, uh-huh. you all have the keys to really help us. And so we hope to share those stories and share those stories of success on ways in which others are finding it really helpful, or if there's ways that we can help in better disseminating it uh-huh. or better uh-huh. laying it out for you. You know, we've been talking a lot internally about, are there things that we need to be able to do to better help you share important resources, consensus and others that are out there.
And, you know, knowing that we are continuing to look at dissemination implementation from a system-wide lens. And that's why we yeah. continue to lean into our pillars that
yes.
this needs to be integrated into education, advocacy, research, as well as family support and direct client care. You know, that's why we keep those pillars in mind, because it needs to be implemented at each of those levels.
Yep. And so if you're out there and you've been in the kind of like the Feeding Matters community for a while, and you have shared a comment in a comment section or participated in the symposium or filled out a survey or being added to the list, like that's all methods of communication and participation with us. There are more formal channels. I do want to give a huge, huge, huge shout out, because it does happen to be Volunteer Appreciation Week, to all of our incredible volunteers who make this thing happen. We don't happen without our volunteers, and this work truly does not happen, especially this dissemination communication piece, without our volunteers. There are amazing volunteers under each pillar that Kyler just mentioned that participate on committees within the Feeding Alliance. There's also volunteers that do single projects outside of the Alliance, and then there's our parents who are holding it together for our network of families and allowing them to be able to support others and support each other. And so we just truly wouldn't be here without our community. And our community councils are out there doing the outreach directly on the front lines. And so truly thank you from the bottom of our heart for all that you do this Volunteer Appreciation Week. So thanks for spending a little bit of time with Kyler and I today, when this is coming out on Tuesday, but Kyler and I for Sunday morning. And yeah, Kyler, anything you think I missed?
No, I just, I so appreciate you recognizing the volunteers. They are the heartbeat of the organization. It is how the work gets done. And it's why the work matters, is because of our volunteers and our community. So thank you all very much for everything that you do.
So true. And I honestly would say that, like, the other part I love about the volunteers, and I'm not only just thankful for the work that they help to move this mission forward, but I feel like they are our focus group, like our informal ears to the ground. Uh-huh. And our volunteers are also helpful because they give us the feedback in real time. And hopefully we are receptive to it. It's our aim to be completely receptive and responsive to all feedback. And that's why you do see so many opportunities for sharing your feedback. And so, yeah, it's a huge community, and it takes all of us But it's been a pleasure facilitating these meetings with you, Kyler, and it was this last weekend. And huge shout out to our co-host, Dr. Haley Estrom, who is our co. She's the third person in our trio of facilitators. Haley wasn't at this last one, but really brings great perspective in terms of being the silent observer, the what needs to be called out, what needs to be doubled down, what is being said that isn't being said that we need to really like dive in deeper on. I feel like she brings such a great value in that perspective, too.
I agree. Her online analysis in real time is unmatched.
Yes, totally. Oh, 100%. So thank you, Haley. I know you couldn't be here with us this Sunday morning, but we just wanted to shout out you as well. So thank you, everyone. We will see you next week, and we'll just continue to provide updates as we do more of these consensus meetings. But hopefully this was a good peek into this work, because I know that this stuff doesn't always get shared once you get to the publication piece. So thanks, everyone. Have a great week.
Bye.
Feeding Matters Infant and Child Feeding Questionnaire was developed as an evidence-based tool to promote early identification of feeding disorders. Developed by internationally recognized feeding experts, this online questionnaire, available in both English and Spanish, can help you better understand your child's feeding differences and needs. Take it online for free today at questionnaire.feedingmatters.org. That's questionnaire, feedingmatters.org. Or type ICFQ in your search bar.